The UNLSA acknowledges that we are recording on the traditional country of the Awabakal and Worimi peoples and pays respect to their elders, both past and present. Welcome to the UNLSA podcast. My name is Lachlan Patey and I'm your host for this episode, where we will dive deep into the fascinating area of careers in-house. We are joined today by two wonderful guests. First is Vera Corbett, who is a senior commercial lawyer at the Newcastle Permanent Building Society. Hi, Vera.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And second is Amy Allen, who is senior legal counsel at the University of Newcastle. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Lachlan.
All right. So to get us started, I'll start with what could be a pretty difficult question. And that is, can you tell us about your day-to-day work as an in-house lawyer? I might start with Vera.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Well, it's actually really hard to describe as my day changes from day to day. I often have a plan of what I'm going to do each day, but then an urgent matter comes up and it kind of throws it all out the window. So I think the best way to describe my day-to-day work as an in-house lawyer is that it is varied. It's sometimes intense, but it's often colourful. So no 2 days are the same, and I find that the variety here is awesome. However, you do need to be able to adapt. And I think, like, you know, my team often jokes, but one of my favourite pet lines to them is, you know, adapt and overcome. Because, yeah, we're often doing that. So my day starts at around 8 a.m. First thing I do is check my emails, the legal inbox, where matters are sent, and I plan my day. I also respond to anything that can be done pretty quickly. I then set aside some time to have a daily morning check-in with my team to see how they are travelling. We discuss what they are working on, what they need assistance with, and we prioritise the daily tasks. So pre-COVID, when we were all working in this open workspace, it was pretty easy to do. Now that the team members are working from home on certain days, so I've had to make more of a conscious effort to pencil, time in everyone's diaries to do this. And I usually mix it up by telephoning a lawyer individually or having a group WebEx. So I think it's really important to have this check-in, not only from a work perspective, but also personally. Because I know that myself, there's been times that I found isolation and working from home environment pretty tough going. So
yeah, absolutely.
I just like having that daily check-in. The other, you know, then we get stuck into it, really. My day gets booked out with internal stakeholder and external party meetings. This might be to obtain instructions from a client on questions I have on a contract I'm reviewing, discussing high-level legal considerations associated with a new project, or to give the green light from a legal perspective on a new marketing campaign. So in between these meetings, I have to try and actually find the time to do the work. So this work, you know, I do a lot of contract work in the commercial law space. So reviewing a large material supplier agreement and typing up changes. I might need to call the business to clarify some questions before I send them the next version to review. So before you know it, it's lunchtime. I like to incorporate a gym session or go for a walk or a run in my lunch break to clear my head and to re-energize for the afternoon. I also encourage my team to get out and enjoy the fresh air if they can. But I've also been known, especially at home, to partake in a little power nap. That's
very
probably
useful.
Not a good habit, but anyway, I'll have to get out of that if I go back into the office. The afternoon involves much of the same thing. You know, I might review a less urgent sponsorship agreement or an NDA that has been on my to-do list for a few days. Might notice that, you know, a wrong template has been used, so I shoot through the correct template to the business and start working on another matter, you know, maybe a lease or a license or something like that. In the meantime, a few more matters come in and I schedule time in the calendar to attend to these. Then inevitably, an urgent matter comes in. It might be an employee issue. I put aside the matter I was working on and talk to the employment specialist and advise our people and culture team. Then I might receive a sponsorship agreement back in its correct form. So I recommence my review of this and send it back to the business. So my day ends around maybe 6-7 o'clock. Varies on the workload, and I like to send an email just acknowledging receipt of any new matters received and anticipated ETAs before I close up shop. But the other thing I probably should mention, which I haven't included in this day, this diary here, is that it's really important to allocate time for process improvement projects, I think, to improve the way the legal team works. We never have enough time in the day for this, but I always kind of, you know, I encourage my team to make the time, as I think, you know, striving to achieve better practice and more efficient ways of working is a key ingredient to success. So whilst it requires a bit of outlay, I think in the end it saves us all time so we can focus on where we can add the most value.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think improving efficiency is definitely a valuable way of spending your day. What about you, Amy? Do you have anything to add to that?
So that was a pretty accurate summary, I would say. Thanks, Vera, of very similar to my day-to-day work life. So I think the point around every day being varied is absolutely spot on. And 99% of the time, the way I expect my day to go is not how my day turns out going.
Yeah, right.
You kind of never really know what's going to come up. And as Vera said, undoubtedly, there will be something urgent that pops out of the blue and kind of end up having to jump around and reprioritize quite consistently. I would say probably a key difference for us at the uni is that we have been back full time in the office since June. So we are back meeting face to face, kind of internally within the legal office. All of those chats and water cooler sessions and team meetings we're able to have face to face, and also meeting internal clients, or you know, across the organization face to face. So that is,
more
normal life. Yeah, absolutely. And it's something I really enjoy about being in house, is that opportunity to meet and engage with clients and build kind of those relationships, perhaps more so than you've got the opportunity to do in private practice sometimes.
Yeah, right. And sort of jumping off that discussion about private practice, obviously both of you started in private practice. So what prompted you to actually make that move to an in-house role? I might start with you, Amy, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. So I was in private practice for 7 or 8 years between two large law firms in Sydney. And through that, I had the opportunity to undertake two client secondments, one when I was a very junior lawyer and then one when I was a senior associate. And so that they were great opportunities because they really gave me that firsthand insight into what life is like as an in-house lawyer. Right. And the thing I absolutely loved about it was how closely you can partner with the business and how it kind of removes that barrier that stands between you as an external lawyer and a client, and actually being able to be in the trenches with your business, driving together towards strategic goals. I really love that. And I found, you know, a great amount of satisfaction through that process. And so I guess after the second one, I really thought of this might be something I'd like to do, you know, on an ongoing basis in the future. But I wasn't in any rush because I did really enjoy my role in private practice as well. But when the opportunity came up at the university, and I'd recently relocated back to Newcastle, and it all kind of felt, you know, like the right time and the right role.
Yeah, right.
So I made the jump.
Yeah, right. And I think that is really interesting about sort of getting into the trenches and working almost, directly with the client in that regard. Vera, what do you have to add to that?
Oh, most definitely. That was one of my points, that I was really wanting to get more involved in the business element side of things. I wanted to really feel part of a successful and reputable organisation and to understand how it ticks. Be a trusted advisor, so to speak. But the other thing that I, prompted me to move in-house was really, I thought it could give me greater flexibility and a better work-life balance. And that's certainly been the case for me anyhow. So, you know, whilst I'm not working until midnight from, you know, from my little synopsis that I gave you earlier, you can see that I still work a pretty intense, so, you know, often juggling 10 urgent matters at the one time. So yeah, when I was in private practice, I had two children. So in the end, I was kind of working part-time, maybe 3 days a week, but it was actually pretty long hours and sometimes on my days off. So I kind of knew that something had to give. So I kind of felt, yep, Newcastle Perm was the thing for me. and it certainly hasn't failed to deliver. So I've been really happy here. I also wanted to move because I was interested in getting more variety. And variety is certainly definitely something I got when I moved here 11 years ago. I was, when I started, I was one of three lawyers in the team. And I,
oh, wow.
Yeah, absolutely worked on anything and everything, any kind of legal matter you could think of that, you know, with, you know, that are applicable to the, you know, financial services industry, regulatory advices, securitization structures, IP, marketing. I like to say I was, you know, a jack of all trades in the legal profession. I was certainly been a steep learning curve for me when I moved in-house, but I absolutely loved it. So yeah, things are a bit different. We have a team of 14 with three distinct areas. We've got a commercial team, regulatory team, and a governance team. So still a lot of variety, but with a little more focus to allow us to perfect our art. I think it's a perfect mix, really.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it sounds like you've helped sort of build the practice there as well, which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's been great. I'm not going to lie, but the fact that I didn't have to record every 6 minutes of my working life was working day daily life was also a major incentive.
It would have been definitely. Yeah, wonderful. So obviously there is a lot of differences, which sort of you two have both highlighted, between private practice and in-house, but what was the biggest change for you when you actually moved from, or made that move from private practice into in-house? Yeah, we might start with Amy as well.
Yeah, funnily enough, I would actually say, if I was going to say the three biggest changes, two of them I would say Vera has just mentioned. So one, you can't go past no more timesheets. Not having an account for every 6 minute interval of your day is such a welcome change. And I think that, I'm not sure I could ever go back. Secondly, also the wide variety of work that comes across your desk. You know, the nature of private practice, particularly in large law firms, is you become a specialist. You get to know your area inside out, but you don't really. So, you know, my specialty was major projects, construction and property. So something tax related came across my desk, or litigious, or, you know, any number of other things, corporate, I would just refer it out to the relevant experts in that team. Whereas, of course, once you're in-house, you do become a jack of all trades. And that is a significant change. The third thing I would say is also just that, as I kind of touched on earlier, when you're an external lawyer, there is this clear boundary between you and the client, and you tend to have a really clear idea of what is my role and what is a matter for the client. Whereas once you're an in-house lawyer, that becomes all shades of grey. You don't have those clear boundaries, and you tend to, your role does transition or move across into also kind of commercial risk assessment and those sort of areas. So it's a much broader role, and you really do have to wear a number of different hats, not just your strictly black letter lawyer hat.
Yeah, right. And I think it's really interesting that and sort of both of you have touched on the point of becoming the jack of all trades, because one thing that I know a lot of commercial law firms now are highlighting is this idea of a non-siloed approach to the way they work. And I guess having multiple pieces of work come across your desk and from different areas and that kind of stuff. But it sounds like in-house has been doing it all this time. And if people are after that kind of sort of more generalist and that sort of approach, that in-house is the way to go. So Vera, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, if you don't mind. Definitely the flexibility, variety. I would say it's also definitely the shift to have a more commercial mindset. To be honest, I found it was quite difficult to get used to that. Not just being a great lawyer and a legal advisor, but also being a great commercial advisor. I know when I first started in-house, I really grappled with the concept of being a lawyer and a commercial advisor at the same time.
Yeah, right, okay.
So I thought the risk profiles of each were so different, so opposing. And speaking with other in-house lawyers and our new people that start with us, our new lawyers, it is interesting to find that they've had similar challenges. I don't know whether you have, Amy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So one of the first things I recommend to our lawyers when they start is to like attend a transition to in-house lawyer seminar. A lot of different organisations run them, and I think that they're really quite useful. But what can I say? What I've learned, you know, from my experience, what I've learned about being a commercial advisor, a great commercial advisor, and what I think it means is something like this. You need to be more than just a lawyer, right? You need to be involved all aspects of the business, you know, and different areas like the risk management that you mentioned and strategy, so forth. You need to be more proactive rather than reactive, to get in early to anticipate legal issues rather than being too late to just put out fires. And for our, this includes being involved in initiatives early and being hands-on with the other business activities to better understand, you know, commercial, strategic, you know, and other drivers and challenges of the business, and to identify those key legal and commercial considerations at the outset. So I think it also means, like, funnily enough, just, you know, just breaking down the language barrier and making, you know, sometimes legal language is so difficult to understand. So
yes, it definitely can be. Yeah.
So make the complex simple, because a lot of our, you know, the business that we speak to don't, you know, they don't have law degrees. You just want to make it simple for them to understand the key concepts. So the other thing, of course, is being more solution oriented. You know, having early visibility on an initiative allows you to provide the insight into, you know, potential legal issues early, so you can work through the solutions in a timely manner with the business. I think importantly, being a good great commercial advisor means having the mindset to be able to guide business outcomes to achieve the organization's commercial and strategic goals, while still limiting our legal, reputational and financial harm. Obviously, that's our job. So, in my opinion, just that shift to have a more commercial mindset was one of the biggest, you know, challenges or changes that I had to make. But it was kind of absolutely necessary to succeed in-house, I think.
Yeah, right. And it's very interesting when you sort of talk about those, I guess, the non-legal skills, the sort of strategic aspects of the business and sort of corporate risk management. Amy, do you have anything to add to that with regards to those skills and I guess, you know, their how they operate with regards to in-house lawyers?
Yeah, so I mean, absolutely, I agree with Vera. That becomes, as an in-house lawyer, that becomes such a key part of your role. And it is, it can be quite challenging to develop those skills. I mean, it kind of, you know, at first it does put you out of your comfort zone, but it's so essential, because that's, you know, understanding your business's key drivers, understanding how your role and your piece and the work you're doing fits into the organization's overall strategic vision. All of those things are so essential to you being able to add value. And exactly as Vera said, it's, you know, it's everything from translating your legal speak into everyday layperson language to understand. So overlaying that kind of commercial reality and commercial risk piece over your advice. So there often can be something that, you know, from a legal risk perspective, you could say, well, that's catastrophic if it happened, but overlay the commercial risk. It's so unlikely to happen. It's really not even a point that's worth taking with the business or wasting anyone's time on. So I think it is really crucial.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, right. And I guess that it kind of leads to the idea, and some students might be concerned that they didn't study business or commerce at uni, so they may not be as well prepared to sort of deal with the commerciality skills and the corporate risk and business strategy skills. In your experience, is this actually a misconception that holds true, or?
Oh, I definitely think it is. Yeah, most definitely. It's not something that I usually even consider in the recruitment process. Like, I have a commerce degree myself, but as do a few of our other lawyers. But otherwise, the second degree of our lawyers are quite diverse. You know, we have someone with an arts, sociology and anthropology degree, others with communications degrees, and
Okay.
science degree as their second degree. So I think it's probably more important to have varying experience in your team to create diversity. let's face it, a contract is a contract. Advice is advice. It doesn't matter if you're giving it in-house or to an external client. The fundamentals are the same. But I think having that commercial mindset is something that takes time to learn for all of us, irrespective of whether we hold a commerce degree or not. So to my mind, it's more important to be a great lawyer who is willing and eager to learn.
Awesome.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. That's spot on. So I can speak personally. My other degree was arts. I majored in English and psychology. So yeah, I actually never saw myself being a commercial lawyer. I thought for most of my law degree I was going to be a criminal lawyer. And then that all changed in my fourth year. So
wow.
I remember having those feelings of, oh no, you know, maybe I'm not going to be enough, or I'm just going to have these massive gaps in my knowledge that I will never be able to bridge. But it wasn't the case at all. Like your hands-on learning as a junior lawyer is so immense. And yeah, exactly as Vera said, like the best thing you can bring to it is a willingness to learn, an eagerness, enthusiasm, a curiosity to exposing yourself to as many different experiences as you can. And then over time you build up the commercial and business acumen. Absolutely. So I would say the breadth of experience across your team is so valuable. And I think those, you know, the arts and humanities degrees, and it's obviously been in the media a lot recently, but I'm definitely a true believer that there's so much value in them. The soft skills you take away from them, the problem solving skills, the critical thinking skills. I mean, I think, yeah, they do really do prepare you, I think, in a terrific way for a career in law.
Yeah. And it's like everyone, you know, what you don't know, you learn on the job. When you start employment in a new industry, the fundamentals of your legal skills are the same, but you just need to learn that lingo, that new industry and the departments that you work with. So, you know, I remember when I first started working with the IT team. So I think I tried my best to understand what was going on. You know, they had, it was kind of like they spoke a different language with all the acronyms they use, like
SAP. Yeah, right.
UATs, SLAs, OWSs. I often had to ask the team, like, please explain. And I found that visual diagrams were helpful for me to understand how a system works. So you find a way to be able to understand things. But I've actually developed like a little glossary of tech terms to help our new lawyers out, just so they don't have to go through the same pain as I went through. But yeah, it's just funny. You just have to, you just live and learn.
Yeah, right. And it sounds like there's a whole new language to learn. But I guess if we can learn legalese, then we shouldn't have an issue learning, corporate
speak. Yeah, exactly. Projects have their own language. Marketing have their own language. And you just have to learn to adapt. Adapt and overcome.
Yeah, awesome. So I guess...
There we go. Plugged it again.
Love the catchphrase.
One of the biggest changes that a lot of people might be thinking about when they're sort of considering going in-house is the idea of having essentially one client. How does that change the nature of legal work in your everyday job? Amy, we might start with you.
Yeah, so this is actually a really great question, because I think there's two sides to it. From one perspective where, you know, ultimately, yes, the organization is your client. And so, you know, it gives you, as we've kind of spoken to, being in-house and having that one client, it gives you this ability to learn the business in a really in-depth way that you wouldn't have that opportunity in private practice. And so there are so many nuances and, key things to understand that I think you actually do provide a much better service to that client because of the depth of knowledge and understanding that you get. In addition to having that opportunity to build really strong relationships and partner with the business so that, you know, that all of that actually makes your life and your job a lot easier. But at the same side, I think the flip side is working for one organization, you still do have this really wide range of clients across the organization. And I would think more so than private practice, mostly in private practice, you will get one streamlined set of instructions, often through an in-house lawyer, or if you're dealing directly with the business, often through only one or two contacts. Whereas when you're in-house, you know, I have these, and I'm sure Vera does too, we cross-organizational projects that I might have, you know, five or six different business units feeding instructions to me, and they'll often have competing priorities and demands. So it actually requires you a lot more to navigate and try to assimilate and align everyone onto the same page.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Because the business units all have their own different pressures and needs. And
absolutely.
You sometimes have to say stop, and you have to reinforce the fact that we're all effectively one client. And this means that sometimes I need to, you know, we need to push things back, push some matters back and explain priorities so that the client's most important matters are dealt with, you know, including those that have the highest strategic focus. Yeah, exactly. It's just all about being the, what is it? It's a common theme, a generalist and a GP of the legal profession, you know, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, you assist the client with everyday issues at any given time.
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating to hear that, yeah, well, you may have one client, that there are so many different problems and sort of different
perspectives.
Streams of work. Yeah, perspectives that are coming in. Yeah. It's potentially, a lot more varied than private practice. So,
of course. If there is a specialised or unusual matter, we're not saying that we do it. You know, we can refer these matters out to external lawyers, but it does kind of give you a broader perspective of everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, right. Wow. So I guess there's a bit for everyone there. So if you like the idea of having one client, go in-house. But if you also like the idea of having heaps of different work coming across your desk, in-house. So, that's wonderful to hear.
But I guess the one thing that you probably don't really appreciate, but the client's also with you 24/7. So you need to be able to switch off. Like I found, especially, you know, with COVID and working from home, and it's made it much more difficult to be able to do this. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Just learn to address it. You know, close your laptop when you finish the day. Don't sneak a peek while your child's having a bath at your work emails. Like, you know, you've got to set aside your work time and your family time. So I guess
that's
private practice as well, but yeah.
And have both of you found that, I guess, it's easier to be a little bit more flexible with your work now that you're in-house rather than private practice?
Oh, for sure. I think there's been such a greater acceptance of flexibility in the workplace all round, you know. The perm's really always been very good at flexible work arrangements and working from home. But I think COVID has proved, you know, that we can all work productively and efficiently in a home environment. Yeah, I'm not saying it doesn't have its challenges. You know, those first couple of months when I had the whole family at home, juggling my husband being out at work, a really crazy busy work period because we were dealing with like lots of new COVID-related issues, new issues, different things. Homeschooling for, you know, three different age girls, 7, 12 and 15, and all with the worst Wi-Fi connection in the world. But, you know.
Oh, yes.
I've now got a nice workspace, a little bit of water view and ambient, like a fast ambient connection. So it's great. My children appreciate the school life much better because they get to see their friends, not being stuck at home with their mum, and also their out of school activities. And my husband's back at work, so yay. Good old.
And so, Amy, so you're back in the office now, but how did the uni deal with COVID and how did your work change over that period?
Yeah, so we were working from home full time for maybe six or seven weeks, kind of April, May period.
Yeah.
Kind of it happened really suddenly, which required you to be able to adapt very quickly, you know, get up to speed on all the on the Zooms and the Microsoft Teams and all of these programs, which we'd suddenly kind of parked and not really paid much attention to when working in the office, and you suddenly really had to adjust the way you were working. You know, as Vera touched on earlier, like coming up with creative ways to check in with the team and to make sure you're still having those conversations in, you know, which happen so incidentally in the office and they're so valuable, but don't necessarily happen unless you encourage them in a work from home environment. Yeah, we definitely had to adjust very quickly there. And as I said, we have been back full time now for quite a while, which we've been very fortunate to be able to do. But also in terms of a work environment, it has required a lot of us to advise on and work through things that have never come across our desk before. I mean, one example was we had a request came in that, you know, the university was going to partner with Hunter New England Health to manufacture some face masks. And this is like the kind of plastic shield face masks that doctors and nurses would wear in the hospital. And, you know, that kind of request came in end of a week. We want to start manufacturing them over the weekend. What risks does the university need to consider before it goes ahead with this? And, you know, of course, that's not really a question any of us had ever asked ourselves, that we're going to 3D print some face shields for use in a hospital. What do you need to think about here? So we got a bunch of those type of requests, which A, fantastic. They're challenging. They give you an opportunity to think about things you haven't thought about before. B, you're obviously, it's helping the community and you're really feeling like part of a pursuing a greater good, which is fantastic. But it definitely did require us to jump onto things quite quickly and adapt and really partner with the business very closely to be able to get those things done and wrapped up so we could give them the green light. Yep, go ahead, Matt, make all your face masks. So we've definitely had some very interesting projects come across our desk recently.
Yeah, exactly. And a similar thing for us, you know, things like loan deferment periods, you know, we've been.
Yeah, absolutely.
Customers. So, you know, it's definitely been an interesting time to say the least. But the other thing that's worth mentioning here is there, and it's probably a good thing that's come out of COVID if there is anything, but the fact that there's a much greater emphasis, I think, on mental health. So we have posters all over the workplace and we're encouraged as leaders to talk about this with our employees. You know, we see, I see it, you know, people on the news, people around us, they are more open to talk about it. And I feel like the stigma around mental health is being reduced, which is definitely a good thing in my mind.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I guess it's a really good, a nice upside to what's been a very challenging year.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, it is interesting to hear both of you talk about, I guess, the unique nature of the projects that have come across your desks this year. Do either of you think that there is, I guess, going to be a lasting change to your organisation in addition to the mental health positive things that we have just spoken
people
about?
People are probably inclined to shake your hand.
Yes, yeah. I guess the nature of business meetings will probably change quite a bit.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's definitely, it's going to be a different world. And, you know, I think we've all learnt from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think the world will never be the same again. And I think that applies equally to the uni as for other organisations. I mean, I think one thing that springs to mind for us is it's really been forced us to think about the way we deliver teaching. You know, it's very challenging for universities at the moment with international students being caught overseas and not able to come to Australia, and they're, you know, obviously a big part of what we do is providing teaching both to domestic and international students. And so one of the things that it's forced all universities to do is to think, how can we be innovative about that, about teaching content, but still have the personal element to our teaching? So, you know, we do still want to have the face-to-face element. We do still appreciate the value in having face-to-face teaching and having, you know, students and lecturers and researchers all being able to mix and mingle and work together. But how do you manage that in a post-COVID world? So I think that's one of the challenges that we've had to work through this year, and I'm sure will have a lasting effect on the organisation.
Yeah, of course. I think there's definitely some positive elements that could come out of that as well, specifically around technology.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I guess the way in which people are sort of working with technology now, it's kind of been forced on people to an extent. As Vera mentioned, the Wi-Fi at home has become a little bit...
to fix that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got sick of going to my mum's house to work from there.
So you thought, yeah, may as well upgrade what we've got at home. But yeah, so yeah, it's very interesting to hear about that. And more generally, what do you two think about the idea of us general counsels and in-house lawyers becoming a sort of a bigger industry within the legal industry? Like, do you Do you see it increasing? Do you see it decreasing? What's the sort of nature of the work going forward, do you reckon?
Do you mean from when, just in my 20-year career, like when I first started, it kind of was really unheard of. Like, I think it was kind of seen as a cushy job that wasn't really that, I didn't have as much, I guess, it's just kind of really, you know, people want to be going house for the reasons that we've talked about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity too. And definitely if you're business minded and, you know, you want to have that, that interaction, getting down dirty with the client, with the client's activities, it's just so great to kind of experience.
Yeah, right. And I guess sort of, so you've spoke about it sort of going from three lawyers to now
exactly.
14 lawyers.
And yeah, 5 years before me, it was, you know, none. So it's kind of...
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's expanding then in a certain respect.
Yeah, most definitely, I think.
Yeah, do you have anything to add to that, Amy? Do you see a similar trajectory?
Yeah, I think so. I think it, I mean, I don't think we'll end up with ridiculously large in-house teams because I think, cost pressures are such on organisations that, you know, there's always an ongoing need to be reducing your costs. So I think there's probably some limit, some ceiling somewhere that we'll hit. But absolutely, as long as legal teams can continue to demonstrate that they're providing a really great value and great service to the business and are reducing the business's external costs so that, you know, less things need to be briefed out or that matters that are briefed out are managed much more efficiently by an in-house team so that it does save the business a lot of costs. I think as long as we can continue to demonstrate that value, absolutely. The current sizes at least will be maintained and perhaps it will grow a bit more. But I don't think we'll see that exponential growth again.
Right.
I think that has been a real shift over the past 10 to 20 years. And now it's probably much more of a slower growth kind of momentum, I would say.
And it's probably also dependent on the industry that you're in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Financial services industry with the Royal Commission. And such a focus on compliance and regulatory aspects. So, business, the organization, it's in their best interest to have a strong legal compliance and risk team.
Yeah, right.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely.
So we might wrap up with one final question, and it's a bit of a tricky one. So what's one piece of advice that you would give your university student self, knowing what you now know as an in-house lawyer? It might start with you, Amy.
Yeah, sure. So it's a great question. I would say that when you're studying the theoretical law subjects at uni, try as much as you can to find the practical application for the law you're studying. So that was one of the things I found really challenging when I was at uni. Say, for example, studying property. The content was so theoretical in nature that I found it really hard to take on board and think, okay, but how would I actually practice this? But once I became a lawyer and I started practicing property law in real life, I realized I loved it and I engaged with it and I had a passion for it. And the real significant difference there for me was actually understanding, okay, well, you know, X case from 1805 in the UK, like what does that actually mean for my life? And so I think as a student, if you can look for opportunities to kind of expose yourself to that practical application. So, you know, for example, getting exposed to real legal work through picking up some PLT kind of placement sort of opportunities, you know, volunteering in a law firm one day a week, that sort of thing. Also just engaging and networking with lawyers, friends of friends, rely on your contacts and the people you know to put you in touch with any lawyers and try to understand from them what is their practice area, why are they passionate about it. And I think really being able to seize on that and appreciate what you're studying, how it applies to a real world context, I think it will make it, so your experience at uni so much more valuable.
Yeah, right. Awesome. I'm sure that's very valuable advice. What about you, Vera? What would you give to your university student self?
Yeah, thanks, Amy, for giving me a little bit more time to think about this. And I think I've got a, I've got a little bit of a backstory here, I think. So just bear with me. But, you know, whilst I love my job now, I didn't always love the law. I know it might be difficult to comprehend. I wasn't one of those passionate law students that always wanted to do law. I loved art. I loved mathematics and dancing. So, you know, I wanted to become a ballerina or a graphic designer or even an engineer. So it's kind of a bit of a surprise that I actually landed in law and you know, in-house law. I did law because essentially my mum, who came to Australia when she was 15, she wanted the best life for me, said I should do it because I got the marks. I don't know how common that is. It's well,
I think it's probably pretty common, yeah.
Yeah. And being the good girl I was back then, I did the law degree. And, you know, I completely understand where she was coming from. She was a Russian immigrant living in the highlands of China, living off the land. So she wanted the best for me. She had no real knowledge of career opportunities. And, you know, all she knew of was doctors were good, lawyers were good. So my little girls, my girls is a bit different. Do what you love, what you're passionate about, because you'll naturally excel at it. But the funny thing is, I am so passionate about my work now, about the law, about in-house and managing my team. It's kind of, you know, done a complete, 360, 180, whatever. So,
yeah, right.
So my advice is hang in there. The law may not be what you initially dreamed of, but there are so many possibilities, whether it be in private practice, in-house, or even working in other areas. You know, lawyers are so sought after. I think at the perm we've got lawyers in, you know, working in procurement, compliance, risk, you know, all different areas. So you just have to find the right fit in an organisation that is right for you. It's true to your values and to your beliefs. That's what I found at the perm. Somewhere where the work environment is teeming with positivity, I really need a positive workplace where people are, you know, happy to be. So, and somewhere you can, you know, you're proud to work and tell people about. So that's me. I think that's my
story. Yeah, wonderful.
Myself.
Yeah. And yeah, it's really nice, Vera, to hear the personal touch to it, because potentially there might be students out there now who are listening to this who are potentially feeling the same way. And it's good to hear that you've sort of found your niche within the law.
Exactly. I think you just So, you know, I think it's just important to know that, you know, you don't have to be stuck in private practice or, you know, doing something that you don't want to do. There's so many opportunities in the law.
Awesome. All right. Well, we might finish there. So a big thank you to both of our guests. It was really wonderful to hear from both of you. And thanks again for sharing your wealth of experience.
Thanks, Lachlan,
for having me.
No worries. Yeah, it was really good speaking to you. And I hope we've got some passionate listeners who will think, ooh, in-house is probably for me now. I'd also like to thank the UNRSA committee for all the help in making this episode a reality. This has been the UNRSA podcast. Thank you and bye for now.